I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. Good evening. The President of the United States remarks to everyone, but especially to the Middle East, saying red line, a red line for us. The president's referring to weapons of mass destruction, chemical or biological weapons, believed to be stored in Syria. And if there's evidence of them being moved or in any way being turned over to enemies of the United States and its allies, that is a red line. I welcome Devin Nunes, congressman from 21 California, who's been traveling in the Middle East for his work for Congress, House Intelligence, and other work that's critical to the security of the United States. Devin, a very good evening to you. Your return from a lengthy trip to the Middle East, just as the President of the United States is asked about Syria, is asked about the civil war, and is asked about the weapons of mass destruction, calling it a red line. First of all, welcome back, Devin, and thank you for helping me on this. In your travels, is Syria now understood to be a civil war and a failed state? Good evening.
Well, John, thank you, and thank you for having me on. Syria is definitely a failed state, definitely in a civil war. A lot of people have been killed. A lot of people are being killed daily. And I remain concerned for these weapons of mass destruction. Dare we say the word, as you know, in the Bush years, that was taboo. And I do want to say that it's important to point out that there are many leaders in Congress, including Nancy Pelosi, who felt that Assad was a reformer. And I'm not sure that President Obama's State Department did not believe that at the beginning of his term. So all in all, I think it's a good development that President Obama has declared publicly a red line, which I'm not sure if he had done that privately. I'm assuming he had. But it is a red line for us, and it's definitely a red line for Israel, because if Israel somehow finds out that those weapons are being transferred into Lebanon to Hezbollah, which, as we know, those are the supply lines from Iran through Syria into southern Lebanon, this is a red line for Israel, too. And so these people are known to quickly use their weapons, and I wouldn't be surprised that in a situation where it becomes desperate for the Assad regime that these chemicals don't begin to move afoot.
Let's review the standoff on Syria since you've been traveling, Devin, because the United States and its allies moved to sanction the Syria regime to stop the bloodletting. Then it moved to tighten the sanctions and perhaps move towards using military force at the Security Council level. That was blocked, as you know, by Russia and its wingmate, China. The Russians at the same time have developed air defense around their Russian naval contingent Latakia on the Syrian coast. This presents the problem that we did not have in Libya. Russia and China are not going to go along with a UN mandate, and Russian air defense means that there is no NATO option, as I understand it, in Syria. Does that about describe the standoff as we understand it now, Devin?
I believe it does, John. I believe that Russia does not want to give up that base. There's talk of an Alawite-controlled enclave there on the coast that perhaps would be a backup plan if Assad isn't tracked down and killed first. But, you know, the situation at the end of the day is very fluid because it's not as if this Free Syrian Army that you hear a lot about on the news is some well-organized army or militia group. There are several groups within Syria now that are receiving funding and support from a variety of different places, all who essentially are fighting a proxy war on behalf of all of the surrounding neighbors. And so, you know, I don't know, even as spending over a week over there, I still am not convinced as to who the best opposition group to Assad will be at this point. It's almost as if we need to try to make sure we have the humanitarian aid necessary to support the surrounding countries that are taking in these refugees, and essentially let these guys fight it out and try to pick up the pieces later.
We know that Syria is being used as a surrogate battlefield for many of the major players in the region. I named two: Riyadh and its ally Qatar, said to be supporting the Syrian Free Army and looking to dislodge Assad. But you know very well that Tehran has a mutual defense pact with the Assad regime, and Tehran has been making threats in the region were Assad to fall. D- Do you believe at this point that Tehran is ready to negotiate an end to Assad's regime in some fashion?
Well, it's interesting that you point that out, because just here in the last few days, it was announced that that the Egyptian president is going to attend this conference in Tehran. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And there's been teasing for some time now since Mohamed Morsi became president. They denied early on that he was in communication with Tehran or taking messages from the supreme leader. That has now been mooted by the fact that he will be traveling to Tehran, and we can presume the Muslim Brothers are in conversation with the mullahs.
Yeah, so it's an interesting development. I'm assuming the folks that that believe that Assad was a reformer also believe that this is some kind of positive step.
Right.
You know, I don't want to rule out that this is a step where you have the different Arab and Persian countries talking amongst each other. I think that is a positive. But as you know, as you well know, and your listeners well know, Iran has always talked a lot and acted very little. So I can't imagine that much comes out of this. Except that that at least they're at the table discussing what potential outcomes are.
The larger threat is Iran and the UN sanctions, which have over this last year tightened and tightened until the EU stopped import. There are several waivers that have been given, one to Turkey, India, others that perhaps have loosened the sanctions. But in any event, the pressure is on Tehran. We're told from the White House, Devin, that the formula is this, that the president and the national security apparatus believe that they can tighten on Syria and force Syria to change or force Assad away, and that that's a pressure that can that flows through Damascus to Tehran to bring Tehran to the negotiating table. In your travels, have you seen any evidence that Tehran is willing to negotiate about the suspect nuclear weapons program?
No, I don't believe they will. I believe they want the weapon. I think they're probably farther along than what even we believe they are, or and most folks believe they are, because you know there's so many bad actors around the world that have these weapons capabilities. So, you know, we know that North Koreans frequently meet up with Iranians around the globe, and we know that the Russians have been involved, and the Chinese closely aligned with Iran. So, I mean, I think they all are careful. As governments not to cross the so-called red line of giving the Iranians this weapons technology. But I think we'd be kidding ourselves to think that there are not people who are on the take from these dictatorships and authoritarian regimes that the Iranians don't have on their payroll or who don't make sure their scientists meet with. So let me just point out, John, that I don't believe that these sanctions work. I think the sanctions can do some damage. But this is just back of the envelope talk here. But if you take a country like Iran, the real folks that these sanctions are hurting are the rich people, the business people, some of the same people who stood up during the Green Revolution, who were helping to funnel money and get out in the streets and support this movement to oppose the Iranian dictatorship. But essentially, those people were squashed. The United States did not stand up for the Green Revolution, and now you're using these sanctions that are definitely crippling the economy. But as far as I'm concerned, I think that the Iran regime has plenty of money left to go for a long period of time, and I think so does the Assad regime. Now that doesn't mean that it makes it necessarily easier for them. It definitely makes it harder, but I don't believe the sanctions themselves will be effective in the long run.
Devin, at this point, your sense, traveling in the Middle East, have people started to arrange themselves to prepare for a nuclear-armed Iran? Is that a cynical but practical preparation?
I believe that there are people that are many countries there who believe it's going to happen. And I think that's why you see Israel being at least discussing leaving all the options on the table. And as you know, there were many folks that believed Israel was the attack on the Iranian nuclear apparatus was imminent. And that's been going on for the last 4 or 5 months. I can't say that by being there that my opinion has been swayed one way or the other. But I do believe the Israelis do not want Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon. I forget the terminology, you're much better than I am at it, but the difference, you know, the Obama administration, their red line is not necessarily having a nuclear weapon, but an armed nuclear weapon or a nuclear device that's able to be delivered to its target. And I think that's a major difference between the Israelis and the United States right now. And if you look at the Republicans that are running for the White House now, Mitt Romney, I believe he thinks that having a nuclear weapon in the hands of the Iranians, any type of nuclear weapon in the Iranians, is a dangerous prospectus for the continuity of that region. That every time I go there, it just seems to get worse over the last decade.
I'm speaking with Congressman Devin Nunes, who has just returned from traveling in the Middle East. Devin serves on the House Intelligence Committee. When we come back, we'll discuss Mr. Romney and his campaign and his remarks about the Middle East and Israel in particular, and then also California politics as you prepare for a congressional election, not just a presidential election. I'm John Batchelor. This is The John Batchelor Show. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. I'm speaking with Congressman Devin Nunes of 21 California. That's near Fresno, and it will change with the redistricting coming up. Devin believes he'll be 22 California. Is that correct, Devin?
Well, as long as the great people of San Joaquin Valley are willing to reelect me, I will then serve in the 22nd district.
And I will make that mistake for a few months afterwards, Devin. Then I'll get used to it. It's kind of like at the end of the school year, how do you had to get used to putting 1958 and not 1957 on your test papers, or in your case, 1997 and not 1998, you young man, you. Devin, you're just back from the Middle East. You mentioned Mr. Romney, his trip to the Middle East. Did that bolster Israel's opinion of the United States? Because the president of the United States, Barack Obama, has not found a way to travel to Israel these last 4 years.
Yeah, my assessment is that President Obama is not very popular amongst the Israeli people. Now, granted, I wasn't on the ground, and I didn't talk to every single Israeli, but I talked to many of them. And I don't think he's very popular, and largely because if you really look at what they set out to do, what the Obama administration set out to do when they were first elected, that was Iran was not supposed to get a nuclear weapon, yet they're closer than they ever have been if they don't have one already. Second, the Assad regime in Syria was, Assad was a reformer, and it was just a matter of time before they began to put reforms on the table. And then President Obama can take credit for a lot of things, but one of which is not when a guy lights himself on fire in Tunisia and all of North Africa all the way to Egypt, all of those dictatorships fall. That wasn't something that even our intelligence services knew about, nor did President Obama even call for. In fact, it took him a long time, as you may remember, to even call for Mubarak's resignation or for Mubarak to step aside. And then where we had opportunities with the Green Revolution in Iran, this was somewhere where President Obama, I think, missed a very good chance to get out there and stand for free people and access to free society for all people of the globe. And he didn't do it.
There will be a day after the election. Is it your measure right now that the Middle East is unstable, that Syria has made everyone at risk?
Yeah, because one thing that you've seen deteriorate over the years, since I've been going over there to the Middle East, I always describe it as you pull one pin and eight things explode literally at once, and now you used to have a relatively safe neighbor to the south in Israel of Egypt, that's now in turmoil with the Sinai being in turmoil, where you had some extremists break through the fence in southern Israel. You also had a long-term commitment and kind of allies where the Turks and the Israelis cooperated closely. Well, that relationship now seems to be deteriorating. And so now you begin to – you take two critical pieces, two very large, historically powerful countries in the Middle East, in both Egypt and Turkey. You throw them in the mix of being unsettled. And now you almost, or literally every country you go to is in danger of erupting at any minute.
So what we have right now is extreme instability. Then in your experience, the years you've been traveling there, you just named every major country to count on.
Yeah, I just don't see. Look, when you think it can't get any worse in the Middle East,
right.
Time I leave, I say, "Gosh, this can't get any worse." It does. It does. And I don't know. I don't know what the answers are ultimately, other than we just have to continue to push for freedom and free elections in these different regimes and hope that none of these weapons of mass destruction get into the wrong hands of folks that would use them, I think, in a way to create death and havoc.
Congressman, welcome back from the Middle East, and I wish a moment to speak of California because you're very well informed about the congressional elections coming up in November. They're not getting a great deal of attention nationally. All eyes are on the presidential election. You are 21 California. With the redistricting, you'll be running for re-election in 22 California. Mr. Cardoza, a neighboring member of Congress, has recently announced his retirement. And Mr. Costa, I believe, is running for the districts that have been put together out of Cardoza and Costa. Have you recruited a very significant Republican nominees to run in these new districts?
Yeah, so many people had predicted that the Republicans were finished in California, and you had Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, now Democratic leader, predicting that they would pick up 7 seats in California. So today there's 19 Republicans out of 53 seats. Nancy Pelosi was predicting 7 potential pickups. I think if you had to roll the dice today, the odds are that Republicans end up maybe gaining a seat in California. You have the governor's tax increase initiatives that are in the tank, where they're supporting high-speed rail boondoggle that goes through the heart of the San Joaquin Valley. And you see this is playing out in real politics. So what you had happen is with the two districts of the two Democrats that were going to run against each other, that was because one Democrat fled his district and moved into Cardoza's district and then essentially forced Cardoza to retire, which then he just resigned last week. And that district, which is an Obama district, a district that Obama won, is going to be won by a Republican. And largely because of Obama's green policies and high-speed rail and green jobs and all of the nonsense they've pushed in California. It's just not flying in the San Joaquin Valley, where you have people who need to make their living off of farming and mining, and they need oil and gas and need to use resources in order to provide food for the rest of the country and the globe. And you have people who live in Silicon Valley, San Francisco, and Hollywood who really are from a different planet compared to the people that live in the San Joaquin Valley.
Congressman Devin Nunes of 21 California, soon to be 22 California, reminding us all we're on a very small planet, and there's one side of it, the Middle East, that's very unstable, and there's the other side of it, California, that has reason to smile. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.